Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's political commentary.
It is time for political commentary here on 95BFM. We're joined by David Slack on the line. Morena, David.
Morena, Rosetta. Morena, Emily.
Hi, David. How are you going?
I'm looking out at this beautiful morning and I'm thinking, life's not so bad after all.
It's not so bad, you know. It has its moments. Blue skies. And apparently, we just talked to our weatherman and apparently they're not sticking around next week, so we better make the most of them.
Mm.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, big run today.
You've published a piece on your Substack sort of poking a bit of fun at things heating up between Chris Hipkins and Christopher Luxon. We had Christopher Luxon earlier this week say that he's not taking any lectures from frickin' Chris Hipkins or the Labour Party. Things are heating up, aren't they?
They are, and you know, if there's one thing this government can do with, it's a couple of lectures. They really are kind of mired. In particular, on this fixation that if you cut back spending, you're going to tackle inflation, and it's a delusion. There are certain times when that can be true. This is not one of them. And so they're making a bad thing worse. And they've seized on councils now as what they perceive to be one of the wellsprings of this problem. And that's wrong too. But Nicola Willis is saying quite emphatically that she sees that councils are contributing to inflation, and therefore a cap on rates will be very helpful in doing something about that. She's wrong. You know, for one thing, I think that calling it a council problem, I think, is misleading. That I think it's a lot more to do with the costs that councils are having to pay for everything they do being inflationary, rather than they're putting their rates up. You know, if there's one thing we've seen again and again over the years, it's that councils fixate on capping rates or you know, soothing the massaging the ratepayer fetish that rates are too high and you need to cut them back. And altogether, actually, sorry, I'm just going to digress a bit here to the larger philosophy of lower taxes and lower rates. Actually, if you look at some of the most prosperous and successful economies, they've been more than eager to tax a bit more, raise rates a bit more, and invest so that you've got a more productive economy. And I give you, for example, the Scandinavian countries. You know, you can go further and better when you pull your money and put it into something productive. But the problem we've got here is that for the last, I don't know, at least 20, maybe 30 years, the National Party have made another fetish, and that is the so-called idea of tax relief, which kind of suggests something a bit perverted, actually. And it's fostered the idea that if you could only get the government to spend less and let you leave more money in your pocket, everything would be better. But in fact, many of the things that make an economy thrive are what the government uses our pooled money to do. And that's why a country like Sweden or Denmark looks so good. And if you were to have more of that kind of activity, you might have more of a shot at the country getting a more diversified economy, doing more 21st century economy activities. We are so narrow based. We're depending on flogging milk powder and timber and butter to the world, and we're making produce and having people come and visit us while we stand at the door of buses sticking a clipboard. There's not big money in that. And the sooner we let go of this fixation on protecting it, farming at all costs, and looking at, for example, Jesus, I'm doing a real rant here. For example, all of the possibilities of a net zero economy. There are so many marvelous technologies we can be doing to take advantage of sustainable energy or renewable energy that comes from the sky and not from the ground. And you know, you could imagine a country where we had so much of that energy that businesses would come here and apply their 21st century technologies to it and do their business here, and we could be thriving, and that would in turn create more kinds of jobs. Jesus, I've got a mile from what we were going to talk about.
But I feel like this is an interesting conversation to have, because, you know, you even look at, you know, over the ditch in Australia, they're paying more tax. But also, you know, do you think it would put New Zealand in a position if we just reached into our pockets a bit more, where we get out of that kind of always two steps behind, like with the hospitals, etc.?
So much so. You're absolutely on it there. You know, our health system has found itself in deeper and deeper difficulty these last 10 and 20 years, and it's exactly because of that, that where we once had a tax load of about, oh, I don't know, 40% of GDP, we're tending more down to 30% of GDP.
Mm.
And inevitably, if you pull, and I'm using the numbers a little bit loosely here, but it's close enough to be accurate, you know, if you're pulling all of your money and it's 30% of all you've all got instead of 40%, it's a huge difference. And if you look at where we were and where, say, America and the UK were in those first decades after the war, America particularly, because Britain was getting back off its feet after the war, but America thrived, and it had a very protected union workforce too, I might say. And it had very high rates of tax. You know, if you were very wealthy, the top end of your income, a very large proportion of that would go back into the pool. And America really thrived. And so, in particular, did its educational institutions and its scientific institutions, so that it was world-leading in all kinds of experimentation and scientific development, and that in turn fed its economic development. Now, here, we've never really had so much of that, but we certainly had, to your point, enough to pay for a really good education system, a really good health system, and you take it back up to 40% or 45%, and you have the means to do that, so that you don't have what's just lurching from crisis to crisis in the health sector.
Well, that's the thing.
It
feels like we're always kind of a little bit behind, and National's created kind of this false economy, if you wish, where we're kind of like, oh, well, we're saving money now because I'm not paying as much tax, but
in the long run, it's going to cost us.
In the long run, we're going to be a lot worse off when we're having to completely rebuild the systems of, you know, education, health.
So much so. And, and you know, anything that gets neglected in health means that a problem that might have been treated relatively effectively and inexpensively at year one is a much more complicated one at year three.
Mm, it's quite archaic, isn't it?
Oh, shit.
There seems to be also a lot of sort of finger pointing from both Labor and National, but Labor appears to be sort of, I mean, we're going into an election year next year, and I feel as though Labor's dancing around confirming what their actual policies around tax reform might be.
Yeah, they can be dismayingly timid, and you know, they have that point I've just been labouring about tax. They have felt themselves constrained by that too. It's always felt to me, you know, that the Helen Clark government did put tax rates back up, but they were, you know, very careful in the way they did it, because they realised that you've got this really potent message running there about this tax relief delusion, and as we saw, you know, after the 2020 result, with a stonking majority, they still became too cautious and sort of thought, oh, we want to hold on to all of that. You probably never were going to. But they were cautious to a fault because of that, and they, it does feel again as though that's where they are. Now, to some extent, there is a certain logic to that, because unlike, say, Labour in the UK, or to a lesser extent, Australia, there was a schism here in the wake of the Rogernomics era, where a good chunk of the Labour Party left and has ended up in essentially what we've got now in the Greens and to a lesser extent TPN. And so what that means is the job of the rump is to sort of take the more cautious approach for and cleave to the middle, while and you leave the bold policy stuff to Chloe and to Marama, and they do a marvellous job of that. If you construct your coalition well, then you can make good progress with that. But all the same, I don't know. I think you do get the sense, especially amongst younger voters, like yourselves, that there is a frustration with that, and that if Labour were to get more bloody bold and say more emphatically, look, the wealth gap is terrible, the shortfall in money for things like health is terrible, we need to change, and we can change without making life unhappy for anybody, I could see that resonating. A strong, clear message that says, look, this is a better way to do it. It doesn't actually mean that the sky will come falling in. The bullshit people have been telling you about how every tax dollar that comes out of your pocket is somehow causing misery to you is truly misleading, because actually it's not being pushed against some wall. It's being spent on the things that matter the very most, like making sure there's enough hospital care so that when your mum gets cancer, she can be seen next week. It's bad,
It'll be really interesting to see if Labour, going in the lead up to this election, gets a bit more plucky.
Yeah, it will be. And it could happen, let's hope.
Who knows? Well, thank you so much, David. That was a really interesting chat. And
pleasure.
Hope you have a lovely week. We'll chat to you next week.
Will do.
All right. Bye.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.